My guests are music director of Early Music Michigan, Eric Strand, and Anne-Marie Boyle, who I know is a soprano, but also something of a co-director, if I can make that assertion. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
So Early Music Michigan will present the Christmas concert on Saturday at Holy Family Chapel, and it's a special all-Bach program. It put into my mind, Eric, that this year there will be no Beethoven Fest, but you're sort of filling the hole with a Bach Fest of sorts.
Another great German composer, right. All this Bach is going to be fantastic, this Advent Cantata, Wacht auf, and the Orchestral Suite in D, number 3, and the Magnificat. So it's a lot of Bach, but a very festive and rewarding experience.
Well, I look forward to talking a little about the instrumental portion of the program, because I know you are a serious instrumentalist, organist, and it's probably a delight to do both roles in one program. But why don't we start off with the singing intensive section. Would you tell me a little more about the piece that begins the program, Wacht auf?
Wacht auf is one of Bach's cantatas that he wrote. He wrote likely around 300 cantatas, about 190 survive. And during his time at his last appointment at the Thomaskirche in Leipzig, Germany, he started writing about 4 or 5 cycles of cantatas, one for each Sunday of the church year. So that's about 60 cantatas. And this Wacht auf was written for the 27th Sunday after Trinity, which occurred a couple times during his tenure in Leipzig.
And so how do you count 27? You count 27 Sundays after Trinity, which is Easter?
Trinity comes up about 50. Trinity's the Sunday after Pentecost. So after 50 days following Easter, then you have Trinity Sunday. And then so it's after that starts the numbering. It's a long season. And it varies in length based upon how early Easter falls that year. So Easter has to fall in March, between the 22nd and 26th of March, for you to get even to a 27th Trinity before Advent begins the next year. So apparently he performed this cantata once during his tenure there, and it's a significant piece of music with recitatives, da capo arias, seriously virtuosic writing for the singers as well as for the instrumentalists. There's some amazing violin solo work, which has all kinds of rapidly moving notes. Some of the texts come from the Song of Songs. It's kind of this love poetry between Jesus and the soul and the bridegroom and the various other characters in it. The themes of this cantata are kind of associated with Advent themes. And so it has been performed more frequently. It's sort of associated with the season of Advent, watch the be ready sort of thing. And so this very virtuosic writing is very impressive. The opening choral movement itself is extensive choral fantasia, which intones the main theme, Wacht auf, or wake, awake, for night is flying. And it's essentially a French, extended French overture style with all kinds of dotted rhythms, an overture that would have regal associations, kingly associations, and which, interestingly enough, plays well into the orchestral suite, or overtures, which begin in the French style. And so these first two pieces really start with French overture. And so it's a marvelously sprightly piece, this choral fantasia, with the sopranos singing the main tune of the hymn, the Cantus Firmus, and the rest of the orchestra just zipping right along with this snapped sort of rhythms throughout.
Anne-Marie, as a soprano, are you singing in the original German for this Saturday?
Yes, for the Wacht auf, yes. It's quite beautiful, the poetry itself and the text.
Sleepers awake, is that the Wacht auf call in the very beginning?
That's right, wake, awake. the watchman's high up in the tower, awake the city of Jerusalem, midnight, the hour has come. Are you ready? So make yourselves ready for the wedding. It's sort of mystical poetry between Christ and the church, and it has to do with wedding and communion. And as I say, it's sort of very much into a love poetry later between soprano and bass. Bass being sort of the role of Jesus, and the soprano being a sort of a soul.
Well, I'm going to stop you there, mm-hmm. because while we're still talking about this opening movement, let's take a break and listen to it. Music of Johann Sebastian Bach from his cantata Wacht auf, which is one of the several hundred, you said, Eric, my guest, by the way.
Right, yes.
Eric Strand.
Yes, he wrote, likely wrote around 300, though we only have about 190 that survive. Sadly, his music wasn't well cared for, and it was dispersed here and there, and in fact, his after his death, his family was broke. I mean, and so they actually sold some of the cantatas for 10 cents a piece. Just really amazing how this great music, and then it was dispersed around around the area. And so we're still actually hoping to discover some of this music even yet.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Mm-hmm. The cantata itself, does it get performed more often than some of the other cantatas? And what makes it so attractive?
It's a familiar tune, Wake Awake for Night is Flying, and it's a hymn that's often sung in churches, and so people are familiar with it. And so it has a certain attractive. And one of the movements Bach transcribed for solo organ and put it into one of his set of six Schubler chorales. And so it's very popular among organists to play this particular movement. And so of all the cantatas, people are aware of this one because of that famous movement for organist. And it calls for unison strings. So the first violins, second violins, viola all play this melody together in unison, accompanied by the continuo instruments, a little bass line, and the tenors sing the chorale tune throughout.
Do sopranos and altos and tenors and basses sing on every single movement, or does he mix it up in like you might see in an oratorio or something?
It's mixed up. There's the most cantatas are for four voices: soprano, alto, tenor, bass. When we talk about the Magnificat later, it's written for five voices, just as a more festive. He had more choral resources for an evening festive event as opposed to Sunday morning cantata. So this movement which was transcribed for organ later, that's very familiar, is just calls for the tenors and to sing the tune, the chorale tune, throughout the thing.
Let's remind listeners that this concert is Saturday at Holy Family Chapel at Nazareth Center. It's on Gull Road, and tickets are available at the door. You can also find Early Music Michigan on Facebook, I believe. The concert features music of Johann Sebastian Bach, and we're looking at the first work on the program, the cantata Wacht auf, Ruft uns die Stimme,
right. Yeah. this Holy Family Chapel is just such a gem, and it's popular venue, but a lot of people still don't know quite where it is. You head out Gull Road, and you pass on your left the Borges Health and Fitness Center. First, you the hospital and the health and fitness center. And there's a stone wall. And when that stone wall comes to, there's a little a lane, a street right there where the stone wall opens up. And you just go straight in, and that's heading toward the chapel. And you enter the front doors and walk down a long hallway to this beautiful space. And so we're very pleased to be there at the Holy Family Chapel, 3427 Gull Road.
Yeah, it is mm-hmm. a beautiful space inside as well, with a, sort of a robin's egg blue dome, and quite an impressive place to hear music, as it has a lot of reverberation. Well, again, the Ensemble Early Music Michigan and the Early Music Michigan Orchestra, you might say, are performing on Saturday. That's this Saturday at 8 p.m. at Holy Family Chapel. Why don't we hear this very famous movement from Wacket Auf? From the Cantata number 140, we heard possibly the most famous movement of Bach's Cantata, which the Ensemble Early Music Michigan will be performing this Saturday. My guests, if you've just tuned in, are director Eric Strand and co-director Anne-Marie Boyle, who's also singing soprano. Anne-Marie, you have actually prepared the ensemble on past concerts for many different performances. Are you in the singing role or the directing role this time around?
I'm in the singing role.
Nice.
Which is exciting, especially singing Magnificat. It was a piece that I sang as an undergrad at DePaul University, and it was sort of my way into early music as a singer, and really finding that, wow, my voice fits this style of music, and it feels... it just felt right, you know, compared to the musics that my teachers would bring to me and expect me to sing operatic arias and these this very big music. And my voice always, at that time in particular, but for quite a while, was fairly small voice with not very much vibrato. And I try to sing Puccini, that doesn't work, you know. And so... I found this this Bach, and I thought, and these runs and these fast, you know, these fast moving notes, and I thought, I love this. It's so fun, and it just it's a great fit for me. And so, and particularly, I love the Magnificat. It's a continuous sort of work, in that it doesn't have any recitatives, and so it is all just pure melody. And to me, every movement of it is just a hit, you know.
So it must be rather nice to suddenly discover how you fit in and rough on your self-esteem prior to that, to be trying very hard to put a square peg in a round hole.
Absolutely. And I think with young singers, at that time, that was the early 90s, and music schools were very much bent on romantic 19th century music, and a very large, you know, developing the singer into a large voice so that you could sing in operas. And that was what they were training the singers for, ideally, you know, that was their ideal. And sort of overlooking a huge part of music history and a huge repertoire. That was is quite important. And nowadays, I think it's sort of, we don't even really think about it. It's sort of, the early music has been sort of co-opted, and it's been done by many, many, many groups, and we just kind of take it for granted a little bit, I think, now.
Oh, you mean like how at the New York Met, they'll put on a Handel opera?
Absolutely.
Now?
Absolutely. You know, and they've said, this is relevant, this is important, and this is beautiful music that we need to bring to our audience.
Sure.
We've expanded the range of what's possible for the voice again. And so before, I think a lot of voice teachers, I don't mean to bash voice teachers anyway, but they try to fit everybody into the same mold and create the same kind of archetypal large voice. And every voice is different, has its own character. And that's what I think the early music movement has done for singers and instrumentalists, mm-hmm. is given them many, many models for use of the voice, and to understand that you can have many approaches to this music, and it doesn't have to be in the same kind of one style for everything fits all. And same with the instrumentalists, is that violinists have much more at their disposal rather than the constant use of vibrato, the constant use of just bigger and bigger sound. There's many more options there, and I think that's what the early music movement has done. It's opened up our ears to the possibilities and the instruments that are out there.
That doesn't mean that you are trying to recreate an exact replica of what Bach might have heard?
No, we're not using period instruments or reconstructions of actual instruments. We're using modern instruments for the most part, uh-huh. And there was only, I think, a brief period in the early music where people were kind of making claims to authenticity. Now it's more the notion of historically informed, that we try to look at Bach from the perspective of Bach and before, rather than looking backward and imposing our own ideas. It's impossible to do that. But there was only, I think, a brief moment where people were saying, this is the pure Bach the way Bach heard it. That's really impossible. We don't have Bach's ears. We don't have the culture, the society. It's many, many things go into hearing. Voices are different today. Boys' voices changed much later, apparently 16 or 17 even, for voice change. Now with hormones and
with drinking milk every
genetically
day.
Modified food and pollution. There's a number of factors. So people are different. And so we try to be historically informed to read what Bach wrote. But boy, wouldn't it have been nice to actually be there to hear it? But
well, I think, too, when you think about the context in which the music was performed, it was a smaller space and smaller forces. And so the space really determined how big of a group you had and the approach to the singing and the playing. And when you look at a playing in a smaller space, you'll look at the smaller details. You'll look at the articulation and how am I going to find interesting ways of approaching the phrase, rather than trying to get my voice or my instrument out to a huge opera hall, mm-hmm. for example, or a huge performing hall. The music's much more intimate, and so knowing that, that informs how you're going to approach the singing and playing.
That's one of the things I love about early music and the composers of the era and the performers of today who perform it, is the clarity. I always hear cleaner lines, and I can understand the articulation, as you said, Anne-Marie. There is a way of cutting through the big, giant-sounding oceans of sound where you lose the sense of words with
early
music. Sort
of character over volume in mm-hmm. some ways. And that's one of the, as instruments became more modern, volume and sound was a prime consideration, whereas volume wasn't quite the same. These Baroque trumpets have much gentler sound than our modern-day trumpets. And that goes for all the instruments. Even the gut strings have a gentler sound to them. And so it all blends a little easier in some ways The modern piano, of course, is modern because it's got a steel frame construction. And why? Because to fill up bigger and bigger concert halls. So yeah, we're sort of trying to recapture an intimacy of the music and the incredible detail that Bach provided. You know.
Roughly how many singers will be on stage on Saturday?
We have about 20 singers, about four singers to a part. And in the Magnificat, there's five voice parts in the Magnificat: soprano, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. And in the cantata, there's four voice parts. So about 20 singers. That's a whole nother controversy about Bach scholarship and whether how many singers he used to a part. And the controversy is whether or not there was just simply a single voice on every part. One singer for the soprano, one singer for the tenors, et cetera. The controversy is not going away. You hear lots of recordings employing that one voice to a part thing. And so it's come down to that we just don't have enough direct information from Bach himself as far as, you know, I want this or that. Bach likely had a choir of about 12 at his disposal at the Thomaskirche. And so maybe three to a part would be sort of typical for a lot of things. Bach's own music was, cantatas were only performed at just the one church where he had the most resources. His other churches weren't up to the snuff to where he allowed his music to be performed as much. He was responsible for more than one church, several churches there in the area. So it's a small group of singers and one instrument to each part.
Right. Early Music Michigan having about 20 singers is kind of ideal.
Absolutely.
Well, let's take a look at the next work on the program. This is the Christmas one that I know of, the Magnificat in D. Was this a Thomaskirche composition?
Yes, just after he arrived in 1723 at the Thomaskirche and arrived in May, just in time for Pentecost Whitsunday festivals. And so this was his big moment here, his first Christmas Eve, Christmas Vespers, and had lots of resources available. And so this is a huge composition with trumpets and oboes and flutes and strings and continuo and a larger choir, five parts, as I mentioned. It's a very festive composition. Every little movement, it just moves right along very quickly. Every movement is like a miniature gem, beautifully portraying the texts of the Canticle Magnificat. It's a work in Latin, and the Lutherans and Anglicans adopted Magnificat as a Vespers or an evening service canticle, along with the Nunc Dimittis. So this first Christmas, Bach was on at his genius, really, level best, and demonstrating what he could bring to the Thomaskirche.
Shall we listen to its first movement?
Wonderful.
Okay. Well, let's remind listeners first that the Early Music Michigan concert is Saturday at 8 o'clock at Holy Family Chapel at Nazareth Center off of Gull Road. More details online at Facebook. You can find Early Music Michigan there. And tickets will be available at the door. Here's music from the Magnificat by J.S. Bach. Music from the Magnificat in D by Johann Sebastian Bach. 1723 did this?
That's right, Christmas Eve, 1723, for the first version, which was in E-flat. And later it was revised into D major. You know, updated a bit.
We're getting a sense of Bach as a working fellow who was responsible for so much music at his Thomas Kirche in Leipzig. But you made an allusion to the fact that he was also handling music in other churches at the same time.
That's right. He was responsible, I think, for up to... He had about four churches, which he was sort of looking, overseeing. And so he had to divide his time a bit and sort of handle a number of duties. At the musical abilities at the different churches varied widely. And so it was really only at the Thomas Kirche that his concerted cantatas were performed, probably because of the musical resources and also the musical abilities. And so his principal work was as cantor of the Thomas Kirche in Leipzig. But
I also get the sense that he was constantly just moving forward to the next thing. Like the cantata we were focusing on earlier went into a drawer after one performance.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just on to the next, on to the next. So there was so many demands on his life.
Yeah, the demands for a working church musician were to create new music every Sunday. You know, people wanted a new composition for that sort of thing. So he created five cycles, theoretically. So that's about 300 cantatas. So you would repeat them, you know, as they were needed.
I should hope so.
And I think that, I mean, even to this day, the Thomas Kirche maintains a certain repertoire of Bach cantatas for use on Sunday morning. But they also probably likely do other composers, many other, not just Bach. So the notion of a working church music director was different in that time than it is today. They didn't draw as much. But even Bach used Palestrina, earlier musics of thing for motets. And so it wasn't all new in all of the churches that he was working for.
Is it a creative job or a more of a drilling job?
Workaday, yeah.
I don't, the job description was much broader and much more was expected of you. You had to be a composer, performer, you know, many organ builder, organ, you know, technician, many aspects. So you were the expert, had wide skills, and it was just expected.
I believe he also had a very acute assessment tool in his brain, because he would review other people's instruments and music, and had a pretty quick way of assessing where you were at.
I can't relate. I mean, when you're a genius, you just, you know, you can do it all, I suppose. But and there's no doubt Bach was a rare individual in many ways. So
as a church music director yourself, Eric, isn't there a somewhat creative aspect in finding the right piece to go with the right message?
Absolutely right. There's finding the best music to fit that's going to please the congregation, that's going to, you know, move the masses. I mean, there's many aspects of doing this. And Bach's writings are filled with all kinds of stories and your relationship with clergy and difficult, you know, strife. So in some ways, that hasn't changed so much over the years. And that you're going to get complaints on either side, and Bach was not immune to complaints as far as length of services, difficulty of things. Some of the congregation, apparently contemporary accounts indicate that they were totally confused during Bach's hymn playing, because he would add all kinds of extra ornamentation and that's leading the congregation astray.
Sure.
To the, you know, point where they couldn't sing along with these familiar tunes. So it's amazing, really, how things haven't changed too much, you know. So the creative tension there between congregation and music director is still in play today.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to share my own experience of going to the Thomas Kirche in Leipzig for a very brief visit a couple years ago, and seeing to my amazement that it wasn't some grand cathedral. It was a something about the size of one of our downtown churches, you know, and maybe even a little more modest. It didn't have a lot of stone and brick. It was wood and plaster, and is still very much a working church, so you can get the sense of the day-to-day life he might have had.
Right, dealing with the choir boys. He had all kinds of duties in terms of training them and teaching them, and at the school there, he even had to supervise their begging on the streets of Leipzig, which apparently that was built into the budget. A certain amount was to be gained asking for money on the streets by the choir boys, and he didn't think that duty was that important, apparently, as you might imagine. You know,
yeah,
he has better things to be working about, but he complained about it. So,
well, let's dip back into the Magnificat, which is one of the centerpieces on Saturday night's concert at 8 o'clock in the Holy Family Chapel, presented by Early Music Michigan. My guests are Eric Strand and Anne Marie Boyle. Anne Marie, perhaps you could tell us about the excerpt we've chosen next, which features a soprano solo going into a choral part.
Yes, this beautiful Quia Respexit, sung by the soprano, also sort of a duet with the oboe, and it is just absolutely, it is breathtaking, and it's just sublime. And then you'll find that it seamlessly goes into a very exciting chorus, Omnes Generationis, All Generations. So the text is, the translation is, for he hath regarded the low estate of his handmaiden, for behold, henceforth I shall be called blessed by, and then the chorus comes in, all generations.
That's the beauty of Bach. We're hearing from the Magnificat in D. We heard a soprano solo into a choral piece. My guests are soprano Anne Marie Boyle and music director and organist Eric Strand from Early Music Michigan, which will present this work and two other major Bach compositions on Saturday at 8 p.m. at Holy Family Chapel at the Nazareth Center. Again, Early Music Michigan is on Facebook, and tickets are available at the door Saturday. And Eric, you've already described where to find Holy Family Chapel. Maybe another quick reminder.
Right. Holy Family Chapel is at the Nazareth Center. It's also called Transformations. But it's out Gull Road, and you pass Borges Hospital if you're heading from Kalamazoo, past Borges on your left, and then it's the Borges Health and Fitness Center. And then there's this beautiful stone wall, and you just take a left there where the wall opens up on that street there. It takes you straight toward the chapel building, and then go through those front doors, and it's a corridor that leads back to this amazing hidden chapel that is just glorious.
Yeah, true. It's become a sort of new home for Early Music Michigan. The music you make sounds so very good in that space. Any last thoughts on Saturday night's concert?
Well, it's amazingly virtuosic music, very challenging music. And although Bach is so familiar, it still doesn't get performed as much as we'd like. And so it's a great opportunity to hear this live. I'm talking with some of the instrumentalists. So they said, I haven't done Magnificat in years, or I haven't done the Suite in D in years. And so there's just great music and another great opportunity to hear it performed live. And so you will definitely be a wonderful way to spend a couple hours.
Mm-hmm. Anything from you, Anne Marie?
I think it's just very exciting music, and it's very festive, especially with the voices and the instruments together. It's quite exciting, and I hope to see many people there.
Well, I've enjoyed this hour, learning a little bit about what, you know, Bach was dealing with day to day, and the way that performing the music on Saturday and performing it here in Kalamazoo is this continuing a tradition of both a working music and a great genius, musician and a great genius. So thank you both for coming here.
Thank you.
Thanks. That's-